Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts and treat yourself to a glass of cool, refreshing Canada Dry ginger ale. Every week at this time, Canada Dry presents Information, Please. We supply four experts ready and willing to take on any and all questions. You supply the stickers. You may submit from one to three original questions. For every question our quartet fails to answer, the sender gets $10 with the compliments of Canada Dry. For every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. So you can make $15 if our experts miss out, which they occasionally do. Our editorial staff may reword your question a trifle. Don't worry about it. Whenever there is a duplication of questions, Information Please uses the one that was submitted first. All questions become the property of Information Please and should be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. And now may I present our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, these questions are now submitted to our board for the first time. The program is entirely unrehearsed and as informal as you please. Seated opposite me, their legs tucked under a long table, are three veterans. Franklin T. Adams, the famous conductor of the Conning Tower column in the New York Post. John Kieran, the sports expert, who last week shot the show from under me by answering the questions before I asked them. And Oscar Levant, pianist and composer, now keeping himself busy as the musical director of the hit show The American Way. And our guest of honor is an expert on a great many things, including the fine old tradition of American liberty. Formerly a member of Congress from Texas, he is now the hard-hitting mayor of San Antonio. I introduce to you the author of In Blood and Ink, and the bearer of a name famous in the history of the Southwest, Maury Maverick. Now, gentlemen, each miss that you make will cost Canada Dry $10, which is cheerfully dispatched to the sender of the question together with another five, just for the use of it. And if you're ready, so am I. But before I begin the formal questioning, I'd like to know how much the regular members of the board know about the very distinguished name of our guest this evening. Now, the word Maverick has, of course, passed into the English language, and it's going to stay there. Can you gentlemen give me the meaning and origin of the word? You stay out of this, Mr. Maverick. Mr. Levant.
Kathleen Maverick.
Oh, sounds like an Irish bull, Mr. Levant. I'll keep that on the side.
Forget about it.
Mr. Adams can do a little better for us. Mr. Adams.
The brand on a horse, or a horse that was not branded, and I think it came originally from Mr. Maverick's family.
That is a fair guess, considering the similarity.
Is that true?
I think these people are trying to frame me, the country boy coming to New York City.
Now, you can look
at you want me to tell the story right, well, I'll tell it for you.
Yeah, tell it right, but tell it short. Mr.
Okay. My grandfather was named Samuel A. Maverick. He took in 453 head of cattle, and they were in the hands of a colored slave, and he wouldn't brand them, so they called him Maverick's cattle, and that's all he is to it. He never was a cattleman, like people say. And also, there's another thing. He only branded his own cattle. Some people say that he branded everybody's cattle, but he only branded his own.
Well, I guess you never had an opportunity to defend your grandfather to as large an audience as you've had this evening, Mr. Maverick. Thanks for the explanation, which is very interesting. And what does the word Maverick generally mean now in our language?
Well, for instance, like LaGuardia, he's unbranded. He's a man of free opinion. It means a man that's not branded, that has his own opinions and independent. That's what it means.
One who won't play with the crowd.
That's right.
That's right. A darn good word. All right. We won't lose any money or make any money on that question. Very glad to get that story from you, Mr. Maverick. Now for the real stuff. Here's where you stub your toe, Mr. Maverick. This one comes from Tom Jackson of Brooklyn, New York. Question about shooting. About shooting. What is the occupation of a man who goes out to shoot Polaris? P-O-L-A-R-I-S. What's his occupation? Mr. Adams? You've got it, Mr. Adams, practically.
I think he shoots a skunk.
Oh, and you couldn't possibly be wrong, though. Couldn't possibly be wrong, though. I hate to say what that answer does. Mr. Kieran.
Well, he's either an astronomer or a seaman.
Yes, probably the latter. What does Polaris mean, Mr. Kieran?
It's the pole star.
Yes, the pole star.
I thought it was Polaris, Phoebus, or the pole cat.
Mr. Kieran, what do you think of Mr. Adams' Latin, which I think he made up on the spur of the moment?
His Latin's all right, but his natural history is mathetic.
All you have to do now, Mr. Mathetic.
I know what that means.
Well, that's one wrong. We can't allow Mr. Kieran to win that horse, Mr. Adams. What is the occupation of the man that goes out to shoot the grade? Shoot the grade. Shoot the grade.
What's the grade?
What is the grade? I can't explain. Mr. Maverick?
Well, he must be an engineer.
He's an engineer, a civil engineer, or a surveyor, yes. What's the occupation of the man who goes out to shoot an actor? Now, don't tell me dramatic critic, boys. Mr. Levant.
Well, not a dramatic critic?
No.
Playwright?
Pretty good, isn't it? No.
Cameraman.
Yes, cameraman. Cameraman for the movies. Quite right, Mr. Levant. The occupation of the man who goes out to shoot a buck.
A what?
A buck.
A deer hunter.
I beg pardon, Mr. Maverick?
He's a deer hunter.
He's a deer hunter, and what else might he be, Mr. Abbott?
A dice player.
Yes, a dice player. ladies and gentlemen, you can see the difference between the cultures of Mr. Maverick and Mr. Adams by their answer to that single question. We got 3 out of 4, but Mr. Jackson wanted 4 out of 4, so Canada Dry is going to pay him $10, plus the $5 for the use of the question. The next one from Mr. H. Lewis of Chicago, Illinois, is a two-part question having to do with some of the laws of our country. Now, in the Constitution or the Amendment, what prevents a state from interfering with freedom of speech or press? That's the first part of the question. Mr. Levant.
The Bill of Rights.
Mr. Maverick.
The Bill of Rights has no reference to a state doing that whatever. That's a popular misconception.
Well, you're popular anyway.
The 14th Amendment refers to due process of law, and the Supreme Court wrote that into the Constitution. The Bill of Rights does not guarantee freedom of speech as against the state
or a
city.
Now, nothing really prevents the state from interfering with freedom of speech or the press. Now, Mr. Levant, you see, you were perfectly right, except you're just on the wrong side.
He said it was a popular misconception, which I represent.
Very nice. That'll represent the public here, Mr. Levant. Nevertheless, I think I have to count us wrong on that. Sorry. What in the Constitution, or its amendments again, allows the Supreme Court to declare laws unconstitutional? Now, Mr. Levant, would you like to come in on...
No, I'm through on
that. All right. Mr. Maverick, you had your hand up.
There's nothing in the Constitution that gives the Supreme Court the right to declare an act of Congress unconstitutional. John Marshall was the first one to enunciate that doctrine, and that's just been done by the Supreme Court. They were arrogated or assumed that right, and so that's how they got it.
Go to the head of the class, Mr. Maverick. That's perfect. That's perfect. We should come in on the first part of this, Mr. Maverick, because that's going to cost Count and Dry $10 going out to Mr. Lewis, Chicago, Illinois. We'll get to you, Mr. Levant. The next question from Maisie Hall of Jacksonville, Florida, has to do with real or fictional characters. I'm going to ask you what character, real or fictional, was identified by means of a song? A song. Okay.
Richard the Lionhearted.
Want to tell us a little bit about it?
Blondel, his minstrel, went to heard that King Richard was in prison in a castle in France, and he went about France playing this song, and King Richard answered him from the tower.
Bullseye. What were you going to add to that?
A little popular misconception. Would Ramona have been wrong?
Would Ramona have been wrong?
Yeah.
Who is Ramona? Oh, the Indian.
Yeah.
Don't know. Never read the book.
Well, it's popular misconception again.
All right. What character, real or fictional, was identified by means of a scar behind his left ear? A scar behind his left ear. This is getting pretty specific. Mr. Levant.
I saw that in the Iron Mask last week. Can that be that phony brother of Louis the something?
You bet.
Huh?
You've got all your facts correct. The phony brother of Louis the something is quite right. It's Philippe, the twin brother of Louis the 14th, famous for furniture.
Who came to no good end, according to...
And do you know the story?
Yes, there are 3 or 4 legends, which I don't think any of them are correct. I have the real story.
You have the... please secure the soup.
You better let Mr. Kieran.
No, I was just going to say, Oscar has the popular message.
Well, you know, he was recognized. Philippe, the twin brother, was recognized by the 3 Musketeers as their ward, Philippe, when he shows them the scar behind his ear. Very valuable piece of information. Now, what character, real or fictional, was identified by means of a split arrow? A split arrow.
Is that an Indian?
Nope.
Well,
you're out, Mr. Levant. Mr. Kieran.
Robin Hood.
You're absolutely right.
It's in Ivanhoe.
Yeah.
He split the shaft of the rival marksman at the famous tournament of Aspi de la Douche and was immediately hailed as Robin.
There you go again, Mr. Kieran. Absolutely right, of course, as Mr. Kieran generally is, Mr. Maverick.
I just wanted to
Don't contradict him, Mr. Maverick.
I just want to say... I just wanted to say to the radio audience that there's no frame-up about this. He really answered that question.
And when next congressman says that, we can depend on his word, can't we?
No, the mayor of San Antonio.
I beg your pardon. Now, what character, real or fictional, is identified by means of a foot? A foot. Mr. Levant.
12 o'clock, the coach. Cinderella.
Yeah. You got it. All right. She was recognized by her footprint, so to speak, wasn't she, Mr. Levant?
Well...
Get it?
No. You know it very well.
All right, Mr. Maverick.
Bigfoot Wallace from Texas. He has such big feet that they recognize him by his big feet.
Nice to get the local color from you, Mr. Maverick. Thanks so much. Hope there are a lot of Texans listening in. The next question from Mabel Forbes of Birmingham, Alabama, has to do with some famous animals in fiction and legend. Whom did these animals rescue? The first, a geese. Whom did geese rescue? Mr. Cure.
They saved Rome from an attack. They tackled on the capital, I believe.
That's quite right. You believe. You know, Mr. Cure. It's a very improbable story, as a matter of fact, if I'm any judge of goose flesh, Mr. Sheeran. The next set of animals, ravens. Whom did the ravens rescue? Ravens, Mr. Adams.
Elijah.
In what book?
The Old Testament.
The Old Testament. You wouldn't know in what book of the Old Testament it was, would you, Mr. Adams?
No, I don't.
I've forgotten for the moment. Mr. Levant?
The ravens, the arrival of two ravens symbolized death in the Nibelungen Ring in the God of Domino, which is the opposite of what you just said.
Yes, yeah, and that's a nice bit of information to get. I'm very glad to get it, Mr. Levant. The next, whom did an ass rescue? An ass. Mr. Levant?
Issachar. No.
Issachar?
No. It's one of Jacob's sons. It means something about an ass's bone or jaw or something.
Yeah, but I don't think that's quite the story. This is a story of a rescue. Mr. Chair.
You mean alive or dead?
What?
Well, Samson used the jawbone.
No, I mean a whole
ass.
Oh. Not the jawbone.
David and his son Absalom?
No.
He was dead.
Now you're guessing, Mr. Levant. Now you're guessing.
I've been guessing for years.
You've been doing very well so far. Mr. Karen?
Well, it's the story of Balaam.
Well, all right. Why didn't you tell us that at the beginning? It was Balaam's ass who turned aside from the angel with the drawn sword, who was invisible to Balaam, but visible to the ass. That's right. Now, whom did a mouse rescue? A mouse. Just an ordinary little mouse. Cute, eh, Mr. Levant?
Well,
Mr. Maverick.
In Aesop's fables, he saved the lion.
Saved the lion, yes. He repaid him when he was caught in a trap. He gnawed the ropes and set the lion free. Well, we got 3 out of 4 on that, and that's all it was asked for. Thank you. The next one from Donald Wetmore of Astoria, Long Island. The pianist is going to play from well-known compositions. He's going to play passages which precede cadenzas, and I am not going to tell you what a cadenza is, not knowing. And Mr. Levant is asked to carry on by playing the cadenza. We'll have the first as soon as Mr. Levant has moved over to the piano. All set, yes. Beethoven's famous Moonlight Sonata, which Mr. Levant rippled off as easy as you please. Let's have the second one. Good enough, and we get the part. Yes, let's leave the sound. Mr. Kieran supplied the answer to that question. Let's have the third and last. Chopin's famous revolutionary
etude.
It's
not a cadenza.
I beg pardon, not a cadenza. What is a cadenza?
A cadenza is to permit a soloist, usually, some kind of florid display where he can win and attract over an audience. It usually appears at the end of a piece.
Isn't it just before the end?
Before the end. Sometimes, don't kid yourself, it's only before the end of the first movement, then the second movement.
Oh, gee, this goes on.
But it was, The origin is, I think, an Italian opera many, many centuries ago, before all of our time.
That's the very problem. Let Mr. Kieran say no.
Well, it's...
Mr. Levant, wouldn't you send us a musical question sometime yourselves that would stump you? I'd like very much to get one.
I don't think I could play the beginning of some of those pieces.
Make a note of that, boys. You'll get it next time. Now, the next question is one that I think particularly interesting because it is submitted by the mayor of New York City, by Mayor Fiorella LaGuardia, and it's submitted particularly to Mayor Maury Maverick, one mayor to another. Now, Mayor LaGuardia is president of the United States Conference of Mayors, and so has special authority to send in this question directed to Mayor Maverick. What is the Holman Rule, H-O-L-M-A-N, the Holman Rule in parliamentary procedure and state instances when it may be invoked?
Well, now, he's taking a dirty advantage
you
of
bet
me.
You bet he is.
That just shows, I've already forgotten what it is. It's in the parliamentary procedure of the House of Representatives, but I've already forgotten.
Yeah. You knew it at one time.
I knew it at one time, but it shows what a good mayor I've become. I'm not wasting my time on thinking of the past, but I'm doing my duty now.
Well, so much for you, Fiorello. I guess I'd better tell those people who are thinking of the past what the Holman Rule is. It's a rule which limits appropriations in an appropriation bill only to such items as are authorized by law. There's a lot more to it, but that's enough for this evening. You knew that, of course.
Oh, yes. There's a lot of stuff about germaneness and relevancy, but the public, they don't care anything about
no.
that.
You don't mind if I just mark you wrong, though,
Mr. That's all right. I'm going to send one in for Fiorello someday.
Because you know you've already lost $10 for us, Mr. Maverick.
Does the mayor get $10 for that?
$10? No, well, pretty soon there's going to be. Yes, the $10 are going to be lost on this.
Well, I'll make them sell more pen of the dry in San Antonio and make up for it.
This is a case, Mr. Maverick, of reversing the old adage. This is a case of the mayor making the money go, so to speak. Now, Mr. Maverick, I don't like that over here. What is the activated sludge process? What is the activated sludge process?
Well, I'm going to answer that question because I'm sure that nobody's going to know when I'm wrong.
I've got
I think there's something about the sewer system.
Good, good.
And anyhow, it's about the sewer system. That's I'm sure of that.
You're absolutely right so far. You want to go on and amplify that by telling us that it's something about the sewer system?
Well, I'm sure it's about the sewer system.
I think we've established that. Well, it's the use of biological organisms to destroy impurities contained in sewage. It's one of the processes employed for the purification of sewage. Do you have any sewage problem in San Antonio? Remember that your
constituents
are listening in, Mr. Maverick.
Well, now we have a politically...
Never mind. Well, I'll give you about half credit on that, Mayor. Now, for what purpose, under a prudently and soundly administered municipal government, such as the ones we have in New York and in San Antonio, are long-term borrowings justified?
Long-term borrowings are only justified for permanent improvements which must be paid over a long period of time.
You
must not have long-term borrowings for current obligations.
Very good. Very good. Now, you can rerun for mayor anytime you wish. Quite all right, Maverick. We didn't get the 2 out of 3 we were supposed to. So that's going to cost us $10, which is going to Mayor LaGuardia, who possibly needs that $10. Plus another 5, Mayor LaGuardia, for the use of the question.
You better save that money up for the questions I'm going to ask him next time.
Next time. Well, let's see. We announced the law so far of $30. And while our experts are recharging their gray matter, we'll hear what Mr. Milton Cross has to say to us.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. Last week, when I concluded my message about Canada Dry water, our expert, Mr. Adams, exclaimed, "What? No pinpoint carbonation?" Now, of course, Mr. Adams, Canada Dry's own process known as pinpoint carbonation is always employed in the making of their excellent club soda, even though I didn't mention it at that particular time. But if pinpoint carbonation were not used, Mr. Adams and everyone would soon note its absence. For this amazing process gives Canada Dry water literally millions of smaller bubbles which bring out the flavor of your favorite drink and keep it lively and sparkling for a good long time. And so, Mr. Adams, this time I hope there will be no misunderstanding. Pinpoint carbonation is always used in making sparkling Canada Dry water. That's why so many thousands of people say to the waiter, Be sure and bring me Canada Dry water.
You satisfied, Mr. Adams?
Perfectly.
All right. And those remarks, Mr. Cross, to address Miss Adams, were pleasantly brief, to be exact, 52 seconds. Now we'll go on with the second half of this program. The first question in the second half is from Anna Slimpicum of New Haven, Connecticut. It has to do with your knowledge of some famous stories in 3 out of 4 cases. Name a famous novel in which the hero's name is never given. This is not so easy. The hero's name is never given. Mr. Kieran?
Moby Dick.
Well, I don't know who the hero would be in Moby Dick. Who would the hero be?
The narrator. Ishmael. A fellow said, call me Ishmael. Yes. That's all you ever hear of his name.
That's a very clever reply, but still there is a name given to him. Call him Ishmael. Call me Ishmael. Afraid I can't take it. Mr. Maverick.
What about Lawrence's book on the desert? He never mentioned his own name or himself throughout the whole story.
Seven Pillars of Wisdom. A famous novel. That was a work of nonfiction.
Oh,
otherwise, a good response, Mr. Maverick, but I'm in a famous novel. Well, the answer is The Virginian by Owen Wister. Do you remember that, Mr.
It was with Gary Cooper, I remember.
Yes, you remember, Mr. Maverick.
Yeah.
Name a famous novel. We'll switch sectors in midstream. Name a famous novel in which the heroine's name is never given.
Is it on the name of the book?
It is. Thanks. No, I haven't read the book. I'm not sure.
Rebecca.
Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier, a bestseller of the day. Name a famous story in which the hero has two names. Mr. Kieran.
Tale of Two Cities.
Who has two names?
Citizen... Evremond is also Charles Donne.
That's quite right. Another example might be Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in Robert Louis Stevenson's famous story, which you also saw in the films, Mr. Levant.
No doubt.
Name a famous radio program in which the hero's name is never given. At this point, our four radio stars seem to be giving up. Oh, Mr. Kieran.
Dan Golenpaul.
No.
Any other?
Ask that question again.
All right. Mr. Levant, a famous radio program in which the hero's name is never given.
It sounds like a commercial.
No, there's no trick in there.
No?
No, that's legitimate.
Jack Benny.
No. No, the answer is the Lone Ranger, which perhaps you don't listen to, Mr. Levant. We don't know who the Lone Ranger is. We never shall know, probably. Got 2 wrong out of that, which means that Miss Lincecum of New Haven is going to get $10 plus $5 for the use of the question. The next one from Jay Miller of Baltimore, Maryland. Now, since the Civil War, have there been any Democratic presidents who received a majority of the popular vote? A majority. And if so, who? You have to, Mr. Maverick?
Franklin Roosevelt.
Franklin D. Roosevelt and any other?
I don't think so.
Right. Absolutely right, Mr. Maverick. Franklin D. Roosevelt in 1932, not in 36, was the only Democratic president since the Civil War who received a majority of the popular vote. In 1916, Wilson received 135,000 short of the majority, which is running pretty close, isn't it, Mr. Maverick?
Yes.
You are absolutely right. Mr. Roosevelt in 1932 was the only one. The next question from M. Prince of Kansas City, Kansas, has to do with identifying these famous musicians from a few biographical facts that I'm going to give you. In the first case, this musician was trained to be a doctor, but he preferred music. And he was cut off by his father financially, and he sang in a chorus, and he married an actress, and he composed program music. Who was that? Mr. Levant?
Well, up to a point, it fits a Russian named Borodin, but he didn't, it could be either he or Berlioz.
Yes. Would you like to take Berlioz?
Yeah, I'll take Berlioz.
All right, you take Berlioz. Berlioz is right. Hector Berlioz. Here's a second. He was a Belgian, born of German descent. He became professor of organ. All right, Mr.
There's only one Belgian composer.
Who is that?
César Franck.
César Franck is the answer, of course. Trained in the Russian military school for engineers, this army officer was too careless to hold any government post too long. Who was that? Mr. Levant again.
You mean he was given to drink?
I don't know whether he was given to drink or drink was given to him. Mussorgsky is correct.
He was given to drink.
Good enough, Mr. Levant. The fourth and last, the musician was the son of a Saxon bookseller, and he crippled his right hand by a device which he wanted to use to make his fourth finger more free. Who was that?
That was Robert Schumann.
That was Robert Schumann, who ended his days how?
He went insane. Incidentally, he was a very good critic.
As a warning for you, Mr. Levant and that. He did go insane. He was a very good critic.
He was a nice fellow, too.
Plus. That's 4 out of 4. Thank you very much, Mr. Levant. The next question from L. Steele of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. What famous poem, if it were written in Tin Pan Alley style, would start off this way? There are two of them. Early in the morning, honey, please make no mistake. Early in the springtime, everything is Jake. That's Tin Pan Alley's rendition of a famous poem not written in that style. Early in the morning, honey, please make no mistake. Early in the springtime, everything is Jake. That's a tough one. Well, it's the song.
Adams.
I beg pardon.
Wouldn't be Queen of the May.
No, not quite, Mr. Adams. It's a song from Browning's Pippa Passes. The years of the spring, the days of the morn, mornings at seven, the hillsides dew curled, the lark's on the wing, the snail's on the thorn, God's in his heaven, all's right with the world. One of the most nonsensical pieces of poetry ever written. Sorry that we missed up on that one. Maybe you can do better with this, which is three times as hard. Here's Tin Pan Alley's rendition. Oh, my sweetie's picture's hanging on the wall. Oh, I've got my sweetie's picture on the wall. It's the spitting image of her in the days I used to love her. Yes, I got my sweetie's picture on the wall. Fascinating rhythm. what famous poem?
It sounded like Close the Rave dunked.
Mr. Van? No.
Close the Raven, it's not.
It was Burns to me.
No, it isn't Burns. It's Browning. Again, The Last Duchess. That's my last Duchess painted on the wall looking as if she were alive and so forth. Sorry to miss out on that, gentlemen. $10 going to Mr. Steele of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Now we've got a total disbursement. Considerable money this evening with the help of Mr. Maverick, Mr. Levant, Mr. Adams, here. $50. Now Mr. Cross wants a brief word with you, and then I'll be back with you as the next week's guest.
More than 30 years ago, a famous chemist, John McLaughlin of Toronto, gave the world Canada Dry Ginger Ale. A ginger ale so wonderfully different, with a flavor and aroma so unlike any other, that it literally changed the nation's taste. Today, the same secret formula that has never been successfully copied makes Canada Dry the favorite beverage in over 50 countries of the world. Canada Dry jealously guards this famous formula, and just as jealously guards the scientific blending of finest Jamaica ginger, pure sugar, perfectly carbonated water, and other choice ingredients. While under the constant supervision of graduate chemists, nothing is left undone to make Canada Dry the purest and most wholesome of beverages, and to maintain the reputation of which Canada Dry is justly proud of being known as the champagne of ginger ale. You'll find ginger ale a refreshing and enjoyable beverage at all times. But for a special treat sometime, try Canada Dry ginger ale and grape juice, mixed half and half and served ice cold. It's a different drink that many people thoroughly enjoy.
Canada Dry, special thanks to you, Maury Maverick, for joining the fun this evening. Now, next week's question faces. We'll have Mr. Karen, we'll have Mr. Adams, we'll have Mr. Rex Stout, author of the famous Nero Wolfe mystery stories. And we're very pleased to present as a very special guest of honor a man who may perform the feat of unsettling Miss Kieran. The guest of honor will be James Kieran, brother of John Kieran. So listen in next week for the brother versus brother battle of the century. Fraternal blood will flow. And to our listeners, we say, please send your questions along. And if you have a stump it, to stump our board of experts, let's have it. There are $5 in it for you if we use your question, and another 10 if we fail to answer it correctly. So you can win 15 in all. Send your letters with questions to Information, Please, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
On these warm summer days, always keep a supply of Canada Dry ginger ale, sparkling water, lime Ricky, and Tom Collins mixer on hand. You'll find the large family size economical, costing only 15 cents, plus usual bottle deposit. This is Milton Cross inviting you to join us now in a refreshing drink of sparkling Canada Dry.